I'd like to welcome everyone to the Florence Weinberg Show. Frank McKay here. So much more importantly, Dr. Florence Byham Weinberg is our host each and every week. She's the subject of a documentary and the author of 15 books and counting, and of course, radio show host and podcast host, award-winning radio show host and podcast host. Without further ado, Doc, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay, thank you.
Well,
and I hope you are too by now.
Yeah, no, I'm doing much, much, much better. A bigger question is how is our president doing? He had a big night last night.
Yes, he did. It was his chance to prove that he is not a senile and doddering old idiot. And he certainly did that. But I don't know whether those people, of course, Fox News will not relinquish their theme, which is that he is incompetent and senile, et cetera, et cetera. Regardless of what Biden proves with his effort last night, for one thing. But he came down through the crowd to come in, remembering everybody's names, remembering who they were, what they were doing, what position they occupied, able to talk to them all by name, shake their hands, and so on. It took him, I don't know, 10 minutes at least to make it from the door to the podium. And then he gave a very energetic, well-structured speech that hit on all the major problems and all the major accomplishments. And there was nothing he left out, and he was able to defend himself against catcalls and boos from the Republican contingent, and a scream from Marjorie Taylor Greene, who was wearing her MAGA hat,
oh my God,
if you please, in the Senate, which is against the rules, and of course screaming. I don't know whether it was obscenities, because I couldn't understand what she was saying. But in any case, it was the ultimate of disrespect, and totally disgusting a performance on her part in every way, the way she was dressed and the way she behaved and the way she spoke, of course. But as I was saying to you off mic, Biden's main problem is his speech. He has a speech defect, which he has done his best all his life to overcome, and I don't think it is any worse than it has been during his entire life right now. But I think some people have difficulty understanding him. And he has, of course, had a terrible stutter all his life, which he doesn't stutter anymore, but he does not enunciate clearly. And I often have trouble understanding him. So there we are.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the fact that you couldn't understand what she was saying is probably beneficial, because every time I do understand what she's saying, I wish I didn't. She's a lunatic, and no way, shape, or form should Marjorie Taylor Greene be able to hold office. And you know, absolutely amazing to me that a woman like that is in a position of power, and she is. Make no mistake about it. I mean, she's handcuffed the middle of the road of the Republican Party, and she's brought them to the right with a close majority. And she is a lunatic, in my humble opinion. She's a lunatic, and she's she's the one who should be questioned for competency. Never mind the president. Having said that, very mean spirited response, and you knew that it would be like that. It's in a election year, and it's Trump running on the other, the former President Trump running on the other side of this. And if Biden slips and says the myth of Fay instead of the 5th of May, all of a sudden he's senile, and obviously it's it's unfair. He should be applauded for overcoming stuttering and getting to the highest position in the country, in the world, and overcoming what he's been able to do. But in order to overcome that, he's had to slow down his speech. And in slowing down his speech, now at 81 years old, every time he stops to think, people are like, oh, he's lost his mind. He's got dementia. He's got, here you go. And on the other side is, as far as the speech goes, anybody that doesn't like Biden or doesn't like the policies of the Democratic Party, they're going to hate no matter what he says. They're not going to.
Yeah.
They're not.
Of course.
It's confirmation bias. They are going to use whatever they can to confirm their positions. And there's no way they're going to ever. He could have been Daniel Webster up there times 10, and gave the greatest oratory speech of the century, and they still would rip it to shreds.
Yes, how true. His speaking last night was not full of hesitation. He really pulled it off very well. It's simply that when he is speaking, to me, the syllables don't come out clearly. And that is just something that he cannot help. I mean, he has conquered the hesitations, the repetition of syllables, and the typical archetype we have of stutterers. He's certainly overcome that, but there is a problem with just plain old forming those syllables clearly, and that he apparently cannot master. So, anyway, he finished this long speech, which I think was brilliantly crafted, and he walked out. Again, he talked to everybody. He still had a spring in his step. He was obviously high on adrenaline. Anybody having confronted that kind of stress and pressure would have been exhausted at the end of it. But no, he was still bouncing and still talking to everybody and hugging and kissing everybody the way he always does.
Which he also gets criticized for.
Yes, well, he is a man of the people, for heaven's sake, and the American people are supposed to appreciate that.
Yep.
But the aristocrats, of course, want him to be more like a British lord in his behavior, and he just wasn't brung up that way.
Yep.
So I don't mind, but a lot of people certainly do. That's true. The problem here was in Texas that we had only 15% come out to vote on Tuesday.
Oh, boy.
15%. So Biden, of course, won by a landslide in that 15%, and Trump, likewise, by a landslide on the other side. So that was no surprise. But my goodness, all of the people down ballot, people made it to who shouldn't be making it because the majority of people just didn't bother. They were bored by the whole thing. And of course, the propaganda against Biden, what people know about Trump and those indictments and the counts, the criminal counts, 91, I think, against him, certainly dampened the spirits of many people, and a whole lot of people don't like him And so they didn't bother to come out because they knew he was going to win hands down. So why bother? And as for Biden, they were dispirited by all the propaganda about him being a senile old man. And so they didn't bother to come out for him either. But I'm furious at the people for reacting that way. And I hope they don't react that way at the actual election, because if they do, we are sunk, because I think the Electoral College will go for Trump if they do.
You know, I'll give you a scenario, and I'm not sure, you know, again, I'm not sure that this works out this way, but right now, yeah, well, I'll just go back a little ways. A couple weeks ago, I did some podcast, and they were clearly pro-Trump people, and I don't know why I agreed to do it. I know someone, you know, who knew the father or something, you know, something like that, and I agreed to do it. And as I was trying to, you know, like give a fair and balanced position, they took it very. They were completely offended. The fact that I wasn't saying Trump was wonderful and Trump was, you know, whatever. I mean, I thought I was very fair to Trump, to be honest with you, much more fair than we would be here and whatever. But they, you know, the listeners took offense and you know, they were, you know, they thought I was very, very critical of Trump. And I merely said that, you know, he brings on, you know, the anger and whatever himself on himself and with his old, you know, in the past when he was in office, the tweets had everybody at each other's throats. And of course, they thought that was terrible. They thought Trump was unifying somehow or another and whatever. But the host said to me, well, you know, in the swing states, we're looking at polls that have the real president, meaning DJT. By the way, when anybody says DJT or 45, you know they're very pro-Trump. You know, it's you know, anytime they use a nickname to describe him, they'll, you know, he's very pro-Trump. But anyway, he said you know, that he's leading Biden in the swing states by 2%. And I said, well, I'd be worried if I were you guys, because if he's not up by 10 points to Biden, I said the Roe v. Wade people are going to come out and they're going to overwhelm that 2%. Now, subsequently, from what I'm hearing, polls are showing in the swing states up to 6% now for Trump. And that got me a little, you know, somewhat concerned, or it would get people concerned that that are cheering on Biden. I think a scenario, and again, I don't know what the circumstances would be, but I do see a scenario that a lot of Democrats would love, and that would be a at the convention, President Biden saying, you know what, for health reasons or whatever, and this is if he's down in the polls significantly, that he would step aside and nominate Michelle Obama for president. And if that ever happened, it would be over. It would be all over. But the cheering from the Democratic side anyway, she would win in a landslide against anybody the Republicans have, never mind Trump. And I you know, there are people that are on the wins, and I don't know who's wishful thinking or whatever. But if the Biden numbers get out of hand, I don't think the Democrats are going to take the possibility of having four more years of Donald Trump, and that's if he ever leaves. I mean, he may never leave. I know Trump supporters that said, you know, we should immediately suspend term limits and let him stay in there for life. And I've heard people say that with a straight face. I mean, a straight face, and you know, basically they're throwing democracy out the, you know, out the window.
Yeah.
So, now I'm always been under the impression that Michelle Obama has no interest whatsoever in running for office, but I don't know her. I've only had a phone conversation with, you know, before he was president, Senator Obama, and so I couldn't possibly say I know anything that would be in their mind. But I imagine there are people begging her to do this.
Yeah.
Because if Michelle Obama ran, there is nobody on in this country that could possibly beat her for president of the United States, in my mind, in my humble opinion. And look, I'm an independent. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. But I could just say that that women would come out on both sides. I think Republican, moderate Republican women would be voting for her. Certainly the African-American vote would be through the roof. And instead of 74% of the vote or less voting for President Biden, you'd have 99.9% of the African-American vote voting for Michelle Obama like they did her husband. You know, that was, you know, that's significant enough to win all the swing states. So those, and by the way, you know, the celebrity lovers, I don't know that there's a bigger celebrity than Michelle Obama out there. And, anyway, so, I don't know. I have no inside information. I don't even have a great guess, but I do know that, that if it gets, if the polls start looking really bad, there's going to be a lot of pressure for something like that to happen. And and Michelle Obama is the one person that Kamala Harris would be able to step aside from, and you wouldn't offend either the female voters or the African American, well, not African American, black voters, because I think Kamala Harris's her ethnicity is not from Africa. I think it's from the Caribbean or whatever, but a black person of color. Right. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's my two cents. So I don't know. You know, I can't look into the future, but depending on what the polling looks like, you know, there's going to be a stepped up game to make sure they don't lose to Donald Trump. And again, I don't know. I don't know. What do you think of what I just said?
Well, I think that's a possibility, and it's certainly entertaining to
consider
to think of it and think what might happen. Because of course, I think she would be incredibly popular. So you may be right; she might just be our next Democratic nominee for president for 2028. You never know. But on the other hand, on the other side, Trump may be disallowed by being convicted, and people just making clear that they don't want to vote for him and that he's going to lose. And so the Republicans ought to be thinking of somebody to replace him, too. Yeah. And it's not going to be Nikki Haley.
Bailed. And she bailed, and obviously they pushed her to bail, which makes me think. Which completely makes me think that that they're solidifying around Trump, and the problem there is even if Trump is not going to do anything for the good of the party, and if he's told to leave, he will say I am not going, and he'll take the Republican Party down with him. So the Republican Party are not, you know. By the way, I heard a Democrat recently say, I never thought I'd miss Mitch McConnell, but, you know, Trump bullied him out of the way, and the Trump people. And then, you know, at this point, you're building a bunch of yes men surrounded by Trump.
Exactly. They're all led by the nose. Yes.
Kevin McCarthy, the other one, you know, he was somebody that had some independence, whether you liked him or not, whether you liked his politics or not. He was not a yes man to Trump, nor is Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell has his other problems.
That's right.
You know,
yeah.
But they're two people who couldn't, deep down inside, couldn't stand Trump. So now,
that's right. Yeah.
Now you're getting out of the way anybody that could possibly be a threat to him, and they're clearing the way and saying basically this is going to be Donald Trump's show one way or the other. So I don't even know that a conviction changes it.
Yeah, well, they may, even after he's convicted, they may still have him, put him up for president of the United States. And I just think that is totally idiotic. That's my humble opinion. But it's certainly a losing proposition if they do that. And most of them will know that. Certainly the ones who are not extreme right, MAGA, the MAGA group, of course, are beyond reason. They're all nuts like Marjorie Taylor Greene. They believe all the lies. I mean, whatever Trump says is true for them. And the rest of us know that almost every other word is a lie. But anyway, we probably ought to get down to the subject of the day.
But anyway, definitely worth talking. And
I wanted us to back around a little bit what happened yesterday, because I think it was a major milestone on the way to the election of a new president. So anyway, my subject for the day is as far away as possible from politics, really. A new article came out in the latest National Geographic magazine about the latest discoveries in Central America, namely about the Mayan civilization.
Oh, wow.
And I have always been fascinated by the early civilizations in this hemisphere. Of course, we all were taught about the Aztecs and the conquest of Cortes of Mexico and of the conquistadores altogether, who came in looking for gold, gold, gold. That was their obsession.
Yeah.
And they found it. And the fate of the civilizations that already existed here, thanks to the brutality of the Spaniards, who devalued totally anything that they came across, if it wasn't gold. And so the cultures and the art and so forth were valueless to them, and they roughly destroyed it all. And the Christian wave of Catholicism rolled over the native religions and cultures, and so we know very little about it, consequently, because it was considered valueless. Anyway, so as I say, I've been from childhood anyway interested in knowing about the Mayas, and things have happened recently. Things are popping, and I wanted to report on it. And the report comes straight out of the National Geographic magazine for this. Let's see what the issue, what the time is for this issue. It is for March, so it's the latest one. And let's see whether it has a title here. I'll have to page back in it. And it is Unveiling the Maya is the title. And my title is simply Maya Archaeology, the Latest. So here I go.
Very good.
My main purpose is to speak of the latest discoveries in Maya archaeology. But first, I need to remind listeners of the history and location of the Maya culture. The impenetrable jungles covering the Yucatan Peninsula and most of southern Mexico and Guatemala and Belize have hidden the ground for centuries. Hernan Cortes discovered Teotihuacan, the capital of the Aztec Empire, in 1519 and conquered the city of 140,000 people in 1520. They also learned of the Mayans, but they were too short of personnel to investigate deeply, even though they were after gold. and I think it was simply the climate and the vegetation that repelled them. They didn't get any deeper into it because of the hostility of the landscape. Catholic priests made inroads into Maya territory, but could do little more than write reports of what they had encountered. An organized study began with John Lloyd Stevens, who was an American traveler and writer, who in 1839 set out to visit a number of Maya sites with an English architect and draftsman. I would call him an artist, a consummate artist, in fact, whose name was Frederick Catherwood. Their accounts, and especially Catherwood's realistic and detailed drawings, drew popular attention to the newly discovered civilization that had in fact endured for over 3,000 years by that time. In the last two decades of the 19th century, modern scientific archaeology blossomed in the Maya region with the work of Alfred Maudsley and Teoberto Mahler. In the early 20th century, the Maya calendar was deciphered, along with the identities of various deities, dates, and religious ideas. But intense research began only in the 1930s, with excavations across the Maya region. In the 1960s, J. Eric S. Thompson published the idea that Mayan cities were empty ceremonial centers that served a scattered population in the forests, and that the civilization was led by peaceful astronomer priests. However, when they began to decipher the script, which was the deciphering was pioneered by Heinrich Berlin, and with breakthroughs in understanding Maya texts, the warlike activities of the classic Maya kings undermined Thompson's peaceful portrayal. As Thompson's concept of Maya culture and architecture indicate, it was at first thought that there were few cultural centers and vast areas with no human occupants around them. Now, for the first time, we know that Yucatan, Belize, Guatemala, and western Honduras were thickly settled with many city centers. And this news is what I'm reporting on today. Today's story depends on knowing about LIDAR, L-I-D-A-R. LIDAR is short for light detection and ranging, and it is a system that sends short bursts of light from a device that uses light in the form of pulsed laser to measure ranges of variable distances to the Earth. These light pulses, combined with other data recorded by the airborne system, the laser devices are stuck to the bottom of airplanes, generate precise three-dimensional information about the shape of the Earth and its surface characteristics. A LIDAR instrument principally consists of a laser, a scanner, and a specialized GPS receiver. Airplanes and helicopters are the most commonly used platforms for acquiring LIDAR data over broad areas. Many archaeologists have been frustrated in their research by the heavy forest that covers nearly all the areas where the Maya civilization once flourished. In 2009, archaeologists Iand and Arian Chase, who are now at the University of Houston, tried something new at Caracol, an ancient city in Belize they had been excavating since 1885. LIDAR scanners initially used for meteorology and tracking celestial bodies were increasingly being mounted on aircraft and to aid mapping and surveying. At the beginning of the project, and I'm quoting one of these ladies, Diane Chase perhaps, or Arian, at the beginning of the project, we thought Caracol was just a few pyramids and temple groups. It's Arian Chase who says that. But when we LIDAR surveyed the outlying areas, we discovered that it was actually a huge, elaborately planned city. The metropolis likely supported at least 100,000 people, almost twice the present-day population of Belize City, unquote. So the Chase's findings sparked other archaeologists to use the new technology. And it seems like yesterday, in 2021, excavations based on the LIDAR data revealed surprises even at Tikal, which is Guatemala's largest archaeological site. The city was at least four times as big as previously thought, and partly surrounded by a massive ditch and defensive wall stretching for miles. Also revealed were a large pyramid and a mysterious compound with links to Teotihuacan, an ancient superpower more than 800 miles to the west. And Roman Ramirez, who is one of the archaeologists, says, we are discovering features that we couldn't perceive even when we were walking on top of them. Elsewhere, two of the explorers, Francisco Estrada Belli and Marcello Canuto, who had already spent decades working in the jungles of Central America, huddled around a computer in an air-conditioned office in New Orleans while they watched the computer screen. At first, it showed only treetops, but a small fraction of laser pulses had penetrated the trees and provided enough data to enable them to peel away the vegetation to reveal a three-dimensional image of the ground. They had thought the area to be virtually uninhabited, even at the peak of Maya civilization, 1,100 years ago. But suddenly, what had looked like ordinary hillsides were shown to have been carved with human-built reservoirs, agricultural terraces, and irrigation canals. What had appeared to be small mountains were in fact large pyramids topped with ceremonial buildings, settlements that generations of archaeologists had assumed to be regional capitals were mere suburbs of far larger pre-Columbian cities connected by paved, raised highways. Human signatures were everywhere in one of the Earth's least hospitable areas. For the first time, the two explorers realized that they could now pinpoint where and what they wanted to investigate further, where to dig. LIDAR overturned the idea that the Maya lowlands were a sparsely populated landscape peppered with a few scattered and autonomous city-states. Each new survey makes it increase, and I'm quoting now from the article, each new survey makes it increasingly clear that the Maya were an interconnected civilization of vast scale and complexity, a metropolis with millions of farmers and fighters and builders of an infrastructure more extraordinary than anyone had previously imagined, unquote. About 40 miles northwest of Tikal, which is one of these cities, explorer Richard Hansen climbed a low embankment and paused to stomp mud off his boots. What had appeared to be a slight rise, a slightly drier stretch where he could locate supplies, LIDAR revealed it to be a causeway, now covered by 2 feet of dirt. But centuries ago, it was raised 6 feet above the surrounding swamp and paved with stucco. He was standing on a part of a complex network of roads that connected the city of El Mirador to more than 400 ancient settlements. It widens to 130 feet as it approaches the city, El Mirador, the width of a modern eight-lane freeway. Hansen says, and I quote, "Can you imagine how many people must have been moving around here to justify committing the resources to build something like this?" Unquote. carbon dating and analysis of pollen and soil suggests that the site was occupied from 2600 BC to around 300 to 100 BC. El Mirador may have been one of the largest cities in the Americas. But how to feed such vast numbers of people? The lowland soil of Guatemala is washed away by months of torrential rains, followed by severe droughts. Hansen's research reveals that the population of El Mirador was enabled by hauling fertile mud from low-lying swamps and depositing it on terraces cut into the hillsides. Farmers elevated the pH, that is, they lowered the acidity, by adding lime to the soil, producing abundant harvests of corn, squash, beans, peppers, and cotton. Runoff from the torrential rains was tamed by a sophisticated network of canals, dams, and reservoirs, an immense infrastructure that is now being revealed. You couldn't feed as many people as the ancient Maya did with the kind of stash-and-burn agriculture people in this part of the world are used today, says Tulane's Canuto, who models population density. He estimates that 10 million to 15 million people lived throughout the Mayan realm at its peak, including many in swampy regions that most archaeologists had thought uninhabitable. To build El Mirador's towering 230-foot pyramid, known as La Danta, armies of workers used hammer stones and obsidian blades to cut and drill into the limestone, then pried the rectangular blocks apart. Hansen and his research partners replicated the process by using tools found at the site's quarries as models. Workers built wooden litters to carry blocks weighing an average of 900 pounds. This knowledge could also be helpful in investigating the Egyptian pyramids.
Yeah, I was going to say.
With enough men and means to feed them, Hansen says, a king could complete a pyramid like La Danta in his lifetime. The Lida revelation has the power not only to rewrite the region's past, but also radically to reshape its future. Impoverished Guatemala could become a tourist mecca for future generations. But looting on a large scale, logging, land grabbing, and narco-trafficking are already laying siege to the newly discovered lands. Protecting what has now been discovered is a major problem, which has sparked several competing ideas. But at the moment, the Maya territory is being looted and narco-traffickers slash and burn the forest to turn the land into pasture for vast herds of cattle for money laundering. U.S. money needs to be invested in a complex effort to save the region's cultural heritage while enabling the present population to survive by traditional small farming and ranching. And by the way, it is helping Guatemala develop this unbelievable heritage it has, might stop the mass invasion of the United States by people fleeing the narco traffickers and other criminals who are dominating the culture in Central America. So there is a high-stakes race going on right now to protect the landscapes and treasures that could teach us so much about the glorious past of the Maya. A huge question remains, however. How and why did the vast Maya civilization disappear? It was already weakened and largely dispersed by the time Cortes set foot on Mexican soil in 1519. This question remains for archaeologists and explorers, investors and visionaries to answer. And that is my report for the day.
Wow. Yeah, that is different than any political report that you're going to get. Listen, it's intriguing, it's terrific, but it also points out how far we've come as a society. The fact that we're discovering things now, and you know, like you said, this may explain what happened in Egypt and them, you know, with the Egyptians building their pyramids and moving the stones. You said 900-pound stones. It's indicative of where we are as a society, and to be able to be in a situation where we can understand the Maya in a situation just invaluable. And it's just it's actually very encouraging.
Yes, it is. One of our major questions about the border right now, which is a major political football, might determine the fate of the presidential candidates who are right now battling for supremacy here in the United States. If we could help Latin America, that is Central America in particular, and a little further south, if we could help them develop their tourist industry, and that would take a lot of people and pay a lot of salaries, we might not have the terrible migration population that we have right now, because it is a mass migration of population from down there to up here. People believe that we have a promised land up here, a land of milk and honey, and they risk their lives to get here, to partake of the abundance that we enjoy here in this country, and which they have anything but abundance down there. But this kind of tourist, I mean, one Hansen, by the way, who is this explorer, who was the one who discovered the causeway that was connecting all the cities down there. And Mirador was the city that he was closest to when he discovered that causeway. Anyway, he wants to build a railroad. He does not want air and roads, air traffic and roads built. He wants a railway from the coast to bring tourists who are now visiting the coastal cities, and that's it. But to bring them on inland to enjoy the incredible sites that are now being discovered and excavated, and therefore bring in the tourists. But his plan is to keep out masses of people otherwise, other than tourists. He does not want to make a theme park or anything like that, but he wants the actual cultural artifacts and buildings and all of the wonders of the Maya civilization to be visible for future tourists. And I kind of like that idea, but on the other hand, people are accusing him of wanting to build a little empire and become a millionaire off the income. And he is, of course, denying any such hidden motive. But something of the sort is being proposed, and money is already being solicited from the Congress, but I don't think anybody's paying attention to it at this point, even though developing Central America, developing the economies, calming down the terrible crime and other struggles that are going on down there would be an answer to our border problems, which are endemic, and without helping Central America in some way, the migration of people is going to continue. And you can't blame any one party for the problems. The problems exist, no matter who's in the presidency here in this country.
Yeah, well, listen, I'm with you 100%. I'm with him 100%. I don't know, and I don't care if he makes millions upon millions of dollars. It would improve the situation there. By the way, I think in 2019, right before the pandemic, I did a bus trip on a Tika bus. That's the equivalent to their Greyhound in Central America. And I did six of the seven countries. I left off the most beautiful one possibly, and that was Belize, just simply because it was just not practical to get up there. But I went on a bus trip from Guatemala through El Salvador to Honduras, to Nicaragua, to Costa Rica, and ended up in Panama. And along the way, I stopped to check out jungles and wildlife and different things. But the folks on the Tika bus were very appreciative that I was there, and that I was. They thought I was a reporter, and I was telling them I wasn't. I was just vacationing and exploring, and they didn't believe that. And you know, I had a little trouble in there on the border. It's a long story. I won't get into it. But I had a trouble on the from the border police on the Nicaraguan side of the Honduras, and they detained me. And it's a story for another day. But you know, to me, if there was a train that went across those six countries, it's very practical, and more people would take the trip and see how beautiful Central America is, and and see how wonderful the people are. The people are just fantastic.
Yes, and they're, and so many of those wonderful people are the ones coming up, wading the Rio Grande and getting cut to pieces in razor wire right now.
Yep.
And of course, they're all being painted as poisoning our pure white blood up here.
Yeah, sure.
And so on and so on. Whereas those are just folks. They're nice people. I'd say 89 or 98% of them are nice people who are just trying to better themselves, trying to find a way to survive. Certainly, the people who are wading across, I mean, when I think of the Lone Star Project, Abbott's
terrible
main expenditure, which is probably $12 or $14 billion by now.
Amazing.
Of our taxpayer money, has done absolutely nothing. Nothing
productive, anyway.
To stop the mass migration of people, and who are being drowned by the boys in the Rio Grande, who are being cut to pieces by the razor wire, mothers with little children. That's who. He should be ashamed of himself.
100%.
The drug peddlers, they are too smart to come across that way. Why should they go to that trouble when they can just fly over?
And they're too rich. They're too rich to go over that way, the drug peddlers.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yes. Yes, we have these people here building million-dollar houses here in San Antonio up on the hillsides. The hillsides are now encrusted with these magnificent mansions, and they belong to drug dealers.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, it's just amazing. Doc, this is just good stuff. And actually, we can make, you know, comment on this and make many shows on the subject of Central America and why it should be built and why it probably is the solution to our border problems.
Yeah.
Yes. Improving.
I mean, this is such a breakthrough. I mean, it's breathtaking.
Yeah.
What they have discovered down there and the possibility of developing it for our own knowledge of what humanity is capable of doing and what it actually did and what that culture, what its religion was, what its myths were, what its art was. And we have a lot of examples of it, but we would have far more if we just stopped the looters, for one thing. Looters are in there digging up right now, as I speak. They're digging up the tombs and robbing the tombs of the artwork that's inside.
Gold and whatever. By the way, that's the Americas. And keep in mind, there's two Americas. There's North and South America, but they're closely related to us. These Central Americans and South Americans even. But let's just stop at Central America. That is the closest we have in the Americas, to what they have in Egypt.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. It rivals what they have in Egypt.
It rivals what they have in Egypt, which is just invaluable. And you talk about early civilization. We don't have the history. We don't have the early history unless we go further south and go into the Mayans. And the Mayans, certainly, they rival the Egyptians.
Yes.
We should embrace that and just wonderful. Wonderful job, Doc. Just wonderful. I can't say enough about what you've done here. And you take on the president's State of the Union was terrific. And I'm going to watch it. I'm going to watch it, I guess, a couple times to just get the vibe. But great job, and thank you very much for doing all this.
Yes, it was my pleasure.
And to everybody, we thank you for listening each and every week. Frank McKay here signing off. Dr. Florence Byham-Weinberg is our host each and every week. And we will see you next time on the Florence Weinberg Show.